This is the Lombardi Line with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard on VSiN.
We welcome you back in. It's hour number two of the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, live from Las Vegas, our downtown sportsbook studios here at Circa. Back with Mike Pritchard. Give him a follow at MI Pritchard. I'm Ben Wilson. Big thanks to the entire crew, led by our producer, Matt Santos, and Andrew Ingold, our technical director behind the glass. A lot of great people helping us out behind the scenes. We have a lot more to get to today on the show, Mike, because Josh Applebaum joins us in about a half hour. Looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah.
Big man Josh, fresh off his ESPN appearance last night, will join us as well. We also will give it into our full Thursday night breakdown. Thanks to Will Hill for joining us in hour number one, talking Ravens-Buccaneers. I know Mike has thoughts going forward, so we'll talk about that. But first, these teams off a bye. We're into that part of the season now where you have teams who, at least for some of them, bye is at a good time. Mm-hmm. Rams certainly qualify. Oh, of man. The teams coming off of byes this week, really needed it. A Rams team that has been, it's been a horrible defensive title by any measure, however you want to look at it, as a team now that has been banged up, lack of personnel. And now you come out of that bye week, you're taking on San Francisco, which we'll get to the matchup in a second, Mike. How, for a team like the Rams, it was so banged up and such a bad place overall, going into the bye week and the timing, how much do you think that actually helps them having the bye where it actually was in their schedule?
Meaning, are they going to improve their execution? I mean, that's hard to say right now because the Rams are just not the same team that they were last year when they won a championship. Completely different. The offensive line, I don't even know if there's a starter on that offensive line. It looks like they're all backups up there for the Rams. Now, Cooper Kupp had a foot injury going into the bye. I mean, that's going to help his situation. You think about the bumps and bruises along the way. Aaron Donald was had some bruises, right? The foot. He's going to be good to go, healthier, right, coming off the bye. That's really the only thing for this team that I can identify that the bye week is going to help. Like, to improve execution, for instance, to get a running game going, they needed Christian McCaffrey. They lost out on that trade. They don't have really a great running back situation or a great running game situation because of the offensive line. And so when you work during a week of your bye, are you taking time off? Are you being more physical? Are you doing things necessary to improve the rushing attack? And the Rams didn't present that at all. I mean, I think they took the approach of being healthy. It's just like McVay. You know, I'm not going to play my starters in the preseason. We're going to be okay in a regular season. Well, everything has been a work in progress for the Rams because of personnel issues, and I think that continues.
Feels like a team taking a few days in Cabo. just get healthy.
Got a Super Bowl championship. Look at my ring.
Title.
Right.
But now you think about the matchup coming out this week where you take on a 49er team that was number one in defense on an EPA per play basis by a wide margin until Patrick Mahomes threw for over 400 yards as the quarterback for the Chiefs last week, bludgeoning San Francisco by 21 in Levi Stadium at the Bay Area. And you think about where the Rams are at, too, heading into that bye week, 31st offensively in overall efficiency on that EPA per play basis. We've talked in the past about the offensive line issues with the left tackle anchoring that unit and Andrew Whitworth retiring in the offseason. So just because there's a bye week, and you talked about how you really think only health is that's like the only thing you can really improve on when you're in a situation right. like the Rams. We just saw this matchup a couple weeks ago, and it was so obvious how limited LA was moving the football against the 49ers. I get you change the venue now, you go to LA, but how different should we really expect this matchup this time around?
I think they'll all be different, right? I mean, the game plans will be similar. The execution should be different. It should be. I mean, you will have the Rams team that will be fresh and off a bye, more energy, if you will, because you're at home. And then you do have some injuries there with the 49ers. I think another week with Christian McCaffrey is going to benefit that 49ers offense. The key to me, though, will be the 49ers defense and how healthy they're going to be because we could see a repeat of that side of the ball. Cooper Kupp's really the only option. I know Robinson has been involved. Now, Van Jefferson's been elevated. So that could be unique for the Rams. If Jefferson can find his way on the field and have that kind of speed impact the Rams offense, maybe things can be different. But again, you have to contend with that defensive front for the 49ers. It all starts there, more so than a Van Jefferson and impact that he could present right there. So, I like the 49ers in the matchup. I think it's solid matchup for the 49ers on paper. Now, it's just about the health of some key players up front for the 49ers.
And that's one thing we think, at least based on the early reports, should be a little bit better for San Francisco after 7 defensive starters out last week.
Mm-hmm.
At least on the defensive line, Eric Armstead is questionable coming into this week. Hopeful, when you listen to the reports in San Francisco, to get him back. Same thing can be said for Dre Greenlaw in the linebacker position. He's a questionable as well. But at this point, you now only have 3 or 4 preseason starters who remain on the IR.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly a team that is slowly starting to get back to fuller health in San Francisco. It's just, can you trust them after 3 weeks where you had back-to-back East Coast road games, a bludgeoning at home against San Francisco, where that all comes together against this team like the Rams in a pretty desperate spot off a bye?
Well, we know by the Christian McCaffrey trade that the 49ers are all in, right? They gave up a haul for that guy, and I think they're all in right now. I mean, Jimmy G is going to be gone after this year, and okay, Trey Lance is going to be your quarterback moving forward. So if this is our best chance to actually go after a Super Bowl championship, we have to win this game. We cannot go 3-5 if you're the 49ers. The desperation angle, I think, is on the side of the 49ers. Like, if the Rams lost, they'll go to 3-4 off a bye, right? You got 4 losses, though, but if the 49ers lose, they're 3-5, and that's going to be so difficult considering the landscape of the NFC. You think about what Seattle's doing as well. I mean, all the teams are lumped together here. I mean, the Cardinals could go on the road and get to 4-4. So I think the 49ers, the sense of urgency is going to be on their side, and getting some key players back on that defensive side of the ball is definitely going to help. But I think it's an all-in mentality for the 49ers this week against the Rams.
When you say that, I keep going back to the discussion we had last week on trying to figure out just who is the second best team in the NFC.
Right.
I still believe when at full health,
mm-hmm.
and if you're extrapolating this out, the projections to end of December, early January, San Francisco is the team that has the blueprint to take out Philadelphia in the playoffs. It's all about value, though, and do you think this is the week to buy in? Or if you think maybe the Rams get the job done this week, you get a much better number on San Francisco. They're around 7-1. If you're line shopping, you can find a little bit better in some other markets. At MGM, 7-1 right now on San Francisco to win the NFC. So is that a bet now for you, Mike, or would you maybe hold off yet another week or two?
I mean, obviously those odds will change if they win, right? I mean, plus 700. If you like those chances, get out in front of it. Plus 700 is attractive enough, I think, to get out in front of it that way, especially how it will change if the 49ers do win against the Rams. I mean, I look at the 49ers football team, and you're right. Like, you cannot go, like I mentioned, you cannot go 3-5, but Jimmy G should be better if he understands who he has around him. I mean, my goodness. You got Christian McCaffrey around you. You have Ayuk around you. You have Debo, hopefully. I mean, I know he's banged up a little bit. We'll see about his availability, too. So that could handcuff you a little bit right there. But Kittle, it's not like he doesn't have enough. Yep. To win an NFC championship. Now, I think he should be able to elevate. Look, he's playing for his future, too. There are so many situations with the 49ers in which things get better for you in the future if you start to win. And then if you look at the 49ers, I mean, if they lose this game, when are they going to go on a streak? When are they going to get hot? To me, I think it has to start this week against the Rams.
Just remains such a polarizing quarterback. The stats still look good, 6th in EPA per play. And then when you watch him, you have a bet on him, like I did last week. Dude throwing off his back foot, jump ball into the end zone, game-changing interception. It's like, come on, man, what are you actually doing?
Right.
So it's that opponent for San Francisco, the Rams. That is the one angle here, the team coming off a bye that really needed a bye. But we also have 3 teams, the other 3 coming off byes, in Minnesota, Philadelphia, and Buffalo, who are flying high as you possibly could have heading into their bye weeks. I'm sure generally, Mike, there's that like public concern of, okay, the teams now who are playing really well, what does the bye week do? Does it disrupt the rhythm? Do you believe there's any truth to that in general?
Maybe, but I've been on the side of Buffalo in terms of getting so close to winning a championship and then not winning a championship. Now, it was college, and we went undefeated when we lost to Notre Dame my junior year. We come back my senior year on a mission, and then we accomplish that mission and win a championship. You know, Buffalo, I think, is so focused right now, and they're going to get healthy through a bye. So I think the bye week where it landed for Buffalo is going to benefit them because of the bumps and bruises, the nature. I love the leadership. They're not going to lose momentum. Now, covering a number, a double-digit spread there, that's different. But no, I don't think the Bills will lose too much. I think the Vikings, I'm looking for the nuances from Kirk Cousins. to elevate that offense. I mean, it's an incredible roster that he has. And then defensively, we all know the shortcomings there. I don't know if a bye week will correct that, but I think you can understand the offense where you are, self-scout, self-evaluate, and elevate the offense. That's Kirk Cousins getting on board that way. And then I think the Eagles, everything's so new to them this year and being undefeated, that they got to keep and maintain this momentum that they have. They're playing very good football. A nice situation with the offensive line being healthy and playing at a high level. So they just need to keep the momentum going, though, after a bye.
Right. It's funny, the general trend here, if you look at since 2003, thanks for Matt Santos for doing the deep dive, our producer getting this together, teams coming off the bye, 341 wins, 325 losses, 18 pushes. This is against the spread, not outright, just against the number. It's a long way of saying there's really not much of an edge here. Slight over time, again, 20 years of data here, very slight favorable edge to the teams coming off a bye, but it's not enough to do anything betting-wise, is it?
No. I mean, there's, again, look at this spread here for the Eagles. I mean, off a bye, minus 11. The Steelers have not been playing great football, but certainly they won one game outright and covered another game.
How dare they disrespect Kenny Pickett that way? Pritch, that was my favorite bet last week. Pickett and the Steelers plus 7.5. That was never in doubt, right?
Oh, man.
Definitely just a super straightforward cover at the end of the day.
Right.
We'll just call it like that. That's how it shows up at the bank account, as at least. And for the meantime, we now have these teams coming off a bye. We'll see what they look like in week number 8. Up next, our favorite Tuesday segment, without a doubt. Right route, wrong route with Mike Pritchard. Who's on the right track? Who's going in the wrong direction? We'll discuss next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
Get everything VSiN has to offer for the rest of the football season for only $99. Sign up now and get VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl, including our Pro Picks, daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, Pro Tools like our exclusive betting splits, Pro Tips with actionable insights to up your betting game, deep dive daily betting reports on the NBA, NHL, and MLB playoffs, plus our upcoming college basketball, College Bowl, and Super Bowl betting guides. Give yourself an edge. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. To get your $99 midseason special today, that's VSiN.com/subscribe. Josh Applebaum, host of the VSiN Morning Daily Bets podcast, joins us in about 15 minutes. But right now, back on the Lombardi Line, without a doubt, the best segment we do on these Tuesday shows, Pritch.
I do love it.
Right route, wrong route, since Mike Pritchard was once a receiver back in the day. Who are running the right routes? Who are on the wrong track right now in the National Football League? So let's go to Cincinnati, a team, Mike, you were really high on last year before they started to show their true colors and got on that late season run. Bit of a slow start here for the Bengals, but have put together back-to-back wins and bludgeoned to death the Atlanta Falcons in a game that the 35-17 scoreline, really not an indication of how big a mismatch that was. Where do you stand right now on Cincinnati here after the back-to-back wins?
I think they're starting to run the right routes again. I mean, we're talking about a prolific offense. That does play physical at times, too. Now, they really can't run the ball all that well, but they can do it enough. It falls back to Joe Burrow, though. The slow start, the new offensive line, new personnel, and meshing all that together, it took some time, longer than people wanted it to take. And then adjusting to the too high safety situation that we see in the National Football League a lot more, whether it's two-man or two-zone or they're going to a soft shell with cover four. It's just been difficult for offenses, spread offenses, to adjust. Now, it gets fascinating to me with the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow because the sack numbers are still there, 3 sacks in back-to-back games, but he still overcomes it. Remember, this guy completed 70% of his passes last year and threw for a ton of yards. It did something that hasn't been done in the National Football League from a core standpoint. When you had 2 wide receivers, a running back and a quarterback under the age of 25 years old, 2 wide receivers over 1,000 yards, a running back, the situation with Mixon, and then Joe Burrow throwing for as many yards as he threw. For that core is intact. T. Higgins was banged up a little bit earlier this year. He seems to be okay. Jamar Chase is a superstar, right? But the adjustment to the too high safety when they spread out teams with whether a 5 wide receiver look or a true spread look with 4 wide receivers, that's kind of helped things for Joe Burrow. And so credit Zach Taylor for that. because he's got a quicker outlet if he has to, but then also he can stand in the pocket a little bit longer and throw the ball vertically down the field. And that adjustment to the two high safeties allowed for teams to change or force teams to change defensively. They can no longer sit back and play that way, which creates the favorable matchup for the Bengals, which is man-to-man and one-on-one coverages a lot of times. And I think they have an elite core of receivers, an elite situation with weapons out there for Joe Burrow. And now that Joe Burrow, after the slow start because of missing time in training camp, it looks like he's rounding into form so far this year.
And before the Bengals made the adjustment to that defensive look, the two high safety, we had seen them on a Sunday night in Baltimore look so frustrated.
Right.
Joe Burrow only attempted one deep pass the entire game. And after the game was sort of defeated, he said, we just had to take what the defense was giving us. How do you go from that? And in 2 weeks, you're threatening to break Norm Van Brocklin's 1951 single-game passing record. How does it happen that quickly?
Yeah, to go back when I played, how you combat a two-high safety or the Tampa 2 when you have the linebackers involved in coverage. Essentially, if you can hold up against four, now you got to throw the ball against seven, right? And sometimes the two-high safety and disguising it, moving bodies around, that can slow you down. But if you attack it, that's a way to combat it. And so I've seen the Bengals start to attack that situation, and therefore you're dictating again. Like, we don't want you to play two high safety, so we're going to do this, and then now you got to change. But now you just change to something that we want you to change to, because we have these elite players on the outside that can get open against anybody. So to address the two high safety situation, starting to benefit that offense for Cincinnati.
481 passing yards for Burrow. Just a few shy of Norm Van Brocklin's 554. That record still stands from 1951.
Yeah.
How about we switch to wrong route? We're going to the NFC North. And what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? This is the most he has ever been an underdog by
right.
in his career. First time Rodgers a double-digit underdog. Only three other times had he even been more than a touchdown dog. Two of those were playoff games. One was against the defending Super Bowl champs, Seattle, back in opening night of 2014. What's going on with this
Green
Bay team?
Well, I mean, it's arrogance, right? I mean, a lot of it is arrogance. A lot of it is the success level that you've had, and in particular, Aaron Rodgers. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback, first ballot, one of the best players to ever play that position, and now he's got a bunch of pups that he's trying to get to a certain level or at least be consistent, right? And so, to me, if you're failing to realize that you're not very good, that's a problem, because how are you going to correct it? How are you going to watch yourself on tape in a critical manner? And I don't think collectively the Packers are doing that. I mean, defensively, they're losing discipline now. Not only not playing to a certain level of expectation, now you're not being disciplined too. So I think it's the arrogance of Green Bay right now. 3 years in a row, they've won 13 games. Right. And so now that they are struggling, they feel like, oh, there's no need to panic and we're going to be OK. No, you're not. No, you're not, because of the path that you're on right now. So I think they need to address everything mentally first. If you start to see signs of that, then, yeah, physically on the field from an execution level, they should be able to start getting that right. I mean, receivers drop in passes. There's no excuse for that. But lack of execution, you can correct that. But you got to realize what's going on, and certainly got to fix it.
And when you don't have the trust to look downfield, it becomes so predictable what you're trying to do. We saw how Washington adjusted to that, made a couple of critical stops on little fourth and short slants and quick outs, and teams start to take that away. And you look at how it then evolves into the rest of your game. And Aaron Rodgers on his air yard so far, the measure of how far quarterbacks are pushing the ball down the field, he's at 7.1 this year. That's 25th out of the 32 qualified starters. He's behind guys like Carson Wentz, behind Zach Wilson, a guy who is the epitomization of dink and dunk in the NFL. It's clearly bled into then when you're not throwing the ball down the field the rest of the game. Aaron Jones, yet another nothing performance on the ground, 8 for 23. And I know you used to do the segment Fix It on Betting Across America last year. That is the ultimate Fix It team right now, because there's no trust and there's no personnel, which it's kind of like you're between a rock and a hard place when you think about those two factors.
But think about it. Things were complicated or too complicated or too difficult to execute against Del Rio and that vanilla defense. Think about that for a minute. Like, really, you had too complex of an offensive game plan for you guys to be consistent and execute against that defense, that vanilla defense. And so I think that's alarming. But yet, if the Packers are not going to begin to recognize that, they could be in a world of hurt.
We could talk about the Green Bay Packers the entire show if we wanted to. All the issues going on for Green Bay. Let's get one more right route in, though, for Mike Pritchard. You're looking at the team in our backyard, right across the street at Allegiant Stadium. The Raiders win. It wasn't the most convincing of 17-point wins this past week. We're down in the second half in that game, but what do you like about what you're seeing recently here from the Raiders?
Josh McDaniels, off of a bye week, has carved out an identity, I think, for the team offensively. It's a new system. Everything's new. This is a team that went to the playoffs last year, a team that could have been reeling a little bit, losing confidence. But the evaluation of the roster offensively, the evaluation of the roster defensively, they've changed some things. Like Chandler Jones, a new addition to the Raiders' defense, an edge rusher, they had him dropping back as a linebacker. Patrick Graham was doing that. He brought his scheme, right? And look, your scheme is your scheme, but yet what kind of players do you have? You have one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. Put his hand in the dirt, let him get after the quarterback. And along with Max Crosby, that has helped, even with a depleted secondary. And then offensively, being complimentary in nature, in helping out Derek Carr. Derek Carr is not Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's not that elite passer that way, but he's effective enough if he has help. And Josh Jacobs running the ball and the physical nature of the offensive line has really helped out the situation for the Raiders offensively. So I think if they're balanced this way and they maintain it, this is a recipe for success. And I think if you look at their schedule, they're right back in it if they can win the next couple of games.
You just showed that a second ago. At the Saints and Jaguars, you have home games with Indianapolis. You go to Denver in the rematch of that divisional matchup, already beat the Broncos this year. What does it say, too, about the fact that in the Hall of Fame game, first preseason game where nobody important is supposed to even take a snap, Josh Jacobs was forced to play into the second quarter. There were a lot of rumors about, oh, is this guy just getting traded? They clearly don't view him as an asset going forward, at least this year. And now here he is, one of the more valuable pieces any backfield has in the AFC.
Right. You know what he's getting?
Well, he has holes. He has open holes to move through.
He's getting paid. That's what is going to happen.
Eventually.
He's getting paid. He's one of the best running backs in the league right now, just a pure runner. But what he's accomplished so far, and I think he's going to be a free agent next year because they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. So, no, he's running with a purpose.
Reckless abandon.
Yes, he is.
Well, having the holes is surprising to me on the offensive line, a line that was brutal last year, creating separation and space, and that's been a big thing for the Raiders. You look at the updated numbers now. Raiders, number one rush-blocking team. That's not a stat I thought I'd be throwing out there. That's where the Raiders are at through 7 weeks. When we return, Josh Applebaum, host of VSiN Morning Daily Bets, joins the show.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
The Lombardi Line continues on a Tuesday from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Sportsbook Studios. Back with Mike, I'm Ben. We have Josh Applebaum, who joins us every single Tuesday at this time, host of VSiN Morning Daily Bets and host of the Market Insights podcast. You give him a follow at Josh_Insights. Turn on my TV last night, Josh. I'm doing some work around the office, getting ready for Monday Night Football, and bang, Josh Applebaum's on my TV. So you made it big time. Thanks for actually giving us some time, Josh, and not big timing us. Thanks for remembering your roots here at VSiN. We appreciate it.
Oh, of course. You know, I would never forget you guys. I love both of you guys. And, you know, that was kind of a shock to me, too, because, you know, I was getting ready for the game, watching Monday Night Countdown. I had taped this hit at DraftKings. I have a promo for last night's game. But they're like, oh, you want to tape a hit? No big deal. You know, maybe you'll see it appear here and there. Then, boom, I'm getting ready for the game. And there's my ugly mug there doing the promo for DraftKings. So it was pretty cool. My phone started blowing up. I had people randomly, high school people who I haven't talked to in 20 years at this point, were Facebook messaging me. So it's pretty cool and just thankful to be a part of VSiN, be a part of DraftKings. Pretty awesome. You know, you've been grinding in the arena so long. Every once in a while, something happens. You're like, man, I'm pretty lucky to be in the position I am. So I was as shocked as you guys were.
So hold up. Wait a minute. You filmed this, but yet they didn't tell you when they were going to air it or how they were going to air it?
Pretty much the Pritch. Yeah. So we did it Sunday. I've been doing the sweat shows on Sunday in the Boston studios at DraftKings. There's been a ton of fun here. Again, you know, just talking about games, getting ready on their pregame show. And they're like, yeah, you know, can you pitch in and do this? And I'm like, oh, absolutely. And they said, oh, yeah, just keep an eye out. You may see it on ESPN. little did I know it would be on the pregame show. So, again, okay. Got lucky on that one. Pretty good hit there. I was pretty excited
about it. I'm just picturing all the high school friends. Hey, coming to that 10-year reunion? What's going on? Right. Hey, Josh.
Well, way past 10 years, man.
Yeah, Josh Applebaum's the headliner now.
I guess he's the headliner. Rolling in. I like those old Enterprise commercials. I roll into the old high school reunion. Josh, I know you have plays already to go, though, for week number 8. And we look at a couple of really interesting spots around the NFL and some early line movements here. Mike and I were talking earlier about the impact of Matt Ryan's benching in Indianapolis. You bring in Sam Ellinger now, and that's coupled with Washington going to Taylor Heinicke last week for the injured Carson Wentz. Commanders pull off the upset as home dogs. Colts continue to look bad. What have you made of this early line move here with Washington going to Indy?
Yeah, so I think the value here is taking the Commanders here in the points, guys. And also, you know, if we take a step back, a lot of people always reach out and ask me, like, when should you place a bet in the NFL? Should you bet it early in the week because you think the line's going to get worse? Should you wait? Let the bet, you know, public bets come in, get the injury reports. I don't think there's ever a perfect answer. I think you got to use a little bit of your intuition. You know, if you see value, you don't want to chase a bad line. You also want to make sure that you get down on a game before a key number leaves you. So to me, this is a play here where I'm taking the +3 right now with Washington. Now, if we take a step back here, you know, the early look aheads were as high as like, you know, -6 Colts. You're down to -3 right now. So the early move, which told me that, hey, when the wise guys who set their own numbers were getting ready for all these lines to drop late Sunday, they immediately said, hey, we're getting a few too many points here on Washington. Let's hit the Commanders, cause this line to move. Also, the other part here, obviously, as you mentioned, is the quarterback change. Matt Ryan, whether he was, you know, injured, quote unquote injured, or just not playing well, either way, he's benched. You're bringing in Sam Ellinger. And we've seen this line quickly move down from, again, an opener of 6 early line now to 3. But here's the key. I think on the one hand, you say, how can I bet Commanders +3 right now when I could have gotten a much better number if I had pounced on it early? But don't let perfect be the enemy of good, because when I look at this 3, guys, I'm seeing a lot of Commanders +3 at -115, Commanders +3, -120. So this goes to the question of when should you bet a game? Early in the week, middle of the week, wait. To me, I'm just staring at these lines all day regardless, trying to make the best decision I can. But the fact that +3 Commanders is juiced -115, I think this thing may be getting down to 2.5. So I jumped on the 3 here today. Again, Ellinger, again, I don't know if you can be that comfortable laying points with, you know, kind of a second year player like this. Also, a severe line move. You saw this come through with one of Pritch's former teams, Seattle, on Sunday. They went 7.5 all the way down to 4.5. No buyback whatsoever. Same sort of thing here. That severe line move, 2 points or more in your favor. 9-4 ATS this year, 69%, 60% ATS since the start of 2019. So I took the points with Washington +3. And guys, I'll just mention this to you real quick. Just notice that London game, Denver and Jacksonville. That was Jags -3 10 minutes ago. It's getting down to 2.5. So I don't know if that's just respected money hitting Ripon, you know, in London there, or will Russell Wilson play? But again, that's another example of a 3 that's going to move off the key number. So if you want to get these key numbers before they fall, these are the bets that I like to make early in the week before you lose the key number.
Love the market insights, Josh. I mean, Carolina, Atlanta, so much to this game, right? I mean, Atlanta's got a great opportunity from a division standpoint. We don't know the opportunity for Carolina. They lose their coach or they fire their coach, and two of their best players are gone offensively. But some line movement, though, early on in the week. I mean, this one opened -6.5. I'm seeing 5s, 4.5s, all over the place. Your insights with this game.
Yeah, I apologize, Pritch. We're going against your former team here. I'm looking at the Panthers here plus the points. As you mentioned, early big line move toward Carolina. They opened getting 6.5. They're all the way down now to 4.5 at some shops. That would qualify as that severe line move of 2 points or more, which has done very well this year in the past few years. Also notable, you know, Carolina's only getting around 35-40% of bets. Public is really riding this Falcons team that, you know, even though they disappointed last week against the Bengals, they're one of the best teams ATS this year, 6-1 ATS. You look at the Panthers, 2-5 against the spread. So I think a lot of new bettors just look at these ATS records and say, oh, you know, you've covered a lot for me, Atlanta. That means I want to bet you. You know, nice little win you had there last week against Tom Brady if you're the Panthers. But hey, you're 2-5 ATS, you don't cover a lot. But as a contrarian bettor, I flip these situations. I want to bet on the team that doesn't cover a lot and is a bad ATS team. I want to bet against the teams that are good ATS teams because they tend to be overvalued here quite a bit. So maybe you get some confidence here beating Tampa Bay. And I'm with you, Pritch. I thought, you know, this Panthers team is getting ready to pretty much tank and go for the number one pick and try to get CJ Stroud. But, you know, with their interim coach Wilkes and playing pretty well against Brady, this is a division game. Again, the fact we're going 6.5 down to 4.5, a lot of dog, divisional dog angles, severe line move angles, that sweet spot that we love, dogs getting 3 or more this year. They're 43-22 against the spread, 66%. So again, you're kind of in no man's land right now at 4.5. But if this thing continues to get juiced, +4.5, -115 to the Panthers, I'm hopping on this 4.5 right now. Divisional dog, good line move. I'll take the points with the Panthers.
You just never know. These teams like Atlanta, mm-hmm. who were 6-0 against the number until last week. It's a different spot to be in, though. They've been a dog so many times. How do you handle being a favorite, laying more than a field goal at home? I would counter Josh by saying, wasn't that kind of Carolina Super Bowl last week? I mean, this team's going nowhere. And to do what they did against Tampa Bay, I would imagine this could be a letdown spot. I know you say it's in the division, and that's certainly a fair point to make. So kind of conflating factors at bay there. Meanwhile, you talked about Broncos, Jaguars. Josh, I'm just looking at the screen. A couple of books are still showing Broncos -3, but it has moved to a heavy juice to the Denver side -120. So if you're interested in grabbing any of those threes, there are a couple out there. You do have to pay a little more of a premium, though, as some books Josh was just mentioning have gone to the 2.5. Josh Applebaum joining us here on the Lombardi Line. We'll transition. Josh, I know you have a couple college football plays you want to throw at us here as we wrap up the segment. Cincinnati, one of those spots here. We're seeing a lot of movement early on in the week, as well as Oklahoma State and K-State. We'll start in the Big 12 matchup here. Sooners and Wildcats, been two teams who've been relatively profitable to bettors this week. What do you think about this matchup?
Yeah, this is my favorite system match here, Ben and Pritch. This would be a system match basically, you know, kind of around the fact of a unranked or worst ranked team at home seeing a dog to fave line move. So you saw it last week with LSU, unranked against Ole Miss. They flip dog to favorite. They come through in this spot. This is basically your fishy number or line move that doesn't make sense, and I want to get behind it. So your angle here would be taking K-State. I took K-State on the money line around -130. A lot of angles to like about K-State with this fishy system match. Number one, they opened getting 2 points. Now they flip to laying a point and a half, 2 points here. So you're seeing this line movement toward Kansas State. That's really important because the public is all over Oklahoma State in this one, getting like 65-70% of bets. And it's also the fishy number of, hey, Oklahoma State, they're number 9 in the country. They're 6-1. They just beat Texas outright, 6.5-point dog, and you win that 141-34. K-State, meanwhile, they're ranked 22nd, so it's not a perfect unranked first ranked system play, but is your worst ranked team that's getting the line move in your favor. Think of it this way. If OK State is 6-1, ranked 9th overall, shouldn't the line be moving toward quote-unquote the better team, OK State? But no, it's going toward Kansas State here. So I like this move toward K-State. You do look at another system match. Two ranked teams just take the favorite, 55% ATS the last about 5 years or so. And also you have QB question marks with Kansas State. Will Martinez play? Will he not? Even though you have some question marks here at QB, Sharp still seem to be hitting K-State. So I'm laying the money line here at K-State, dog to favorite, very similar to that LSU play from last weekend.
All right, big matchup in the American, too. Oh, yeah. Mike's ready for this one. Well, UCF. Basically a pick 'em most spots. Okay. So, Mike, you're going to be glued to that one.
Yeah, I am. I know. What do you got, Josh, on this one?
Oh, yeah, I got the same thing here, guys. Okay. Give me UCF. You know, this is another buy low, sell high, kind of a dog to favor. I guess a pick 'em at this point. But if you look at this spot toward UCF, they opened getting 1 at home against Cincinnati. By the way, Cincinnati is ranked 20th in the country. UCF is unranked. Cincinnati is getting a big majority of bets here. They're getting like 70% of bets across the market. Yet, why did this line open so short? Why is it flipped now to a pick'em or even some UCF minus ones there? I want to see UCF get up to -1.5, -2. I want that further movement toward UCF, but you're coming off a loss. You're playing a ranked team. You're unranked. Again, you got to ask yourself, why are these lines moving toward quote-unquote the worst team or the worst ranked team? Tells me that there's some respect money in their favor. So just as I'll be hitting K-State, same thing here. Give me UCF.
Josh Applebaum, give him a follow at Josh_insights. Josh, we appreciate it as always. You didn't big time us. That's all we care about. Yeah, thanks for being a friend of the show. We'll see you next week.
I'll always be here, guys. I ain't going nowhere. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Love it. Have a great one.
Hey, as far as college goes, Pritch, you're just happy. Colorado got off the schneid a couple weeks ago. Will not be a winless season in Boulder. That is a good thing for one Mike Pritchard. When we come back, our Thursday night preview, Ravens, Buccaneers, next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points. You can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Big thanks to the whole crew today helping us out on the Lombardi Line. We're presented by BetMGM, as always, and led by our outstanding producer, Matt Santos. A big thanks to Andrew. Got Mikhail in the house. Aramis, Rob, Ryan. I think I got everybody. Yeah, I did. They're all here. All here making us look as good as we possibly can. As we wrap up the show, VSiN Big Bets with Dave Ross and Amal Shaw coming up next. But first, Mike, our Thursday night preview, our only time we can talk about this together, with the Ravens going to Tampa, taking on the Buccaneers. And you have a couple teams that are hard to trust right now. Oh, we talked about this with Will Hill earlier. Ravens' inability to close out games, Tampa's lack of cohesion and just general togetherness, especially on offense. With the Ravens here now laying 1.5 market wide, we saw this open right around some faraway places, even had the Bucs as high as 3-point opening favorites. Big flip here, but sitting where it is right now, who do you give the edge to in this short week spot on Thursday?
I like Will's play or reference to a play, and that's the first half for Baltimore.
-1.
-1, laying it that way, because you got a short week. We know that it's an aging roster on both sides of the ball for both teams, really. To be honest with you, both teams are no longer what we thought they were, or certainly what we've witnessed over the last few years. And the adjustment for Tampa, how are you going to prepare for Lamar Jackson and what he presents? But you saw it last night. When you have a Pop Warner type quarterback who's the best athlete on the field, that's hard to prepare for, hard to stop. And I think in a short week, there's an advantage for Baltimore against Tampa. Tampa Bay's defense is not what they used to be. Shaq Barrett, I looked this up because he's disappeared, right? And he's really the only edge, true edge guy that they have up front for Tampa. He hasn't had a sack, I want to say, since September. I'm looking at it right
it's
now. I can't
Halloween,
believe it.
Mike.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I can't believe it. I can't believe the second October. Game of the year, he had 2 sacks, and he has not had a sack since then. And so Tampa Bay is so different than what they used to be. And then we know what's going on with Tom. I don't care how great you are or how great you have been. Things are just different, crumbling around you on and off the field. You just pull up any type of Tom Brady search, and it's all about his personal life. And that takes a toll on an athlete. You know, Tom Brady over time has been so buttoned up too, right? Like in terms of personal life stuff. But now it's on every internet search and everywhere you can turn. And that has to start to get to you, on top of the fact that you've said that you're now committed to the team, even though your actions are different. All right. And Todd Bowles in over his head, I think, in handling the situation with Tom Brady. So many factors. I like the first half situation with Baltimore here this week.
And there's no longer some of those other factors to hide any of the issues going on for Brady. You don't have a veteran head coach anymore who is comfortable in leading a team, where you had Bruce Arians with that veteran experience from a season ago. You also don't have a defense that is nearly as dominant as it was a season ago. And that leads us into the matchup for Thursday night. Baltimore second in running game on an EPA per play basis against the Tampa defense. We think of them with Vita Vea in the middle, number one rush defense each of the past couple seasons. They're 17th this year, Mike. From first by a wide margin to 17th. And you're now being asked to stop arguably the most dangerous, prolific rushing attack in the NFL. That's where you have to get to on this overall handicap, I'd at least think.
Yeah, I mean, you got a 3-4 defense, I think. Akeem Hicks has been hurt, too, and that's not really a good thing right there for Tampa. But they are an aging roster. I mean, you think about Levante David and how long in the tooth he could be at linebacker. I mean, Devin White, phenomenal player, right? Sideline to sideline, all this speed, and they use him on pass rush situations too. He can't cover when you're looking at the pass game or play action. So think about that for Andrews and a lot of people for Lamar Jackson from a play action standpoint. And then he's a leading rusher. Lamar Jackson's a leading rusher on top of that too. So just so much to prepare for. I from a first half standpoint, Baltimore getting out into a lead situation. We know they can't sustain it. They can't hold it. That kind of benefits Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, what he's been over time. They need to make a handful of plays if they can keep it close, but I'd rather not just last the entire game with this one on Thursday night.
It's like, even though there's a clear edge from a matchup basis with Baltimore's rush offense against Tampa's cratering rush defense, the reason you look first half is because of the wildest stat, without a doubt, we've seen in the NFL this season, where you look at over the past 20 different instances where in NFL history, teams have started the year with seven straight games, having a double-digit lead at some point in those games. Those 20 teams, if you're extrapolating that out, that's 140 games, a combined 135-5 record. Baltimore Ravens, they've held a double-digit lead each of the first seven games this season. They are 4-3. They're 4-3, Mike, when the average over the previous 20 teams to do that was a 96.5% win rate.
Yeah, they've invented ways to blow games, too. I mean, Miami's comeback against in the fourth quarter alone had everybody with the perception that Miami is this high-powered offense, right? And I don't know what's going on with Baltimore. I mean, I know their style of play is conducive for what Tampa wants to do, which, again, I don't want to last the entire game with a wager on the Ravens. I like what Will Hill talked about, and that's the first half situation. And is this a get right spot for Tampa? Who knows? Who knows when that's going to be? But from a betting angle, I would rather not chance the four quarters, and that's great information that you had about Baltimore. I'd rather just play this game with two quarters in mind.
I know you love the teasers, Mike. This does qualify as a one teaser, like teasing Tampa up through 3-7. Would you dare put the home dog Brady at his lowest in the market against the team we just talked about, very untrustworthy, playing it out for four quarters? Would you dare throw Tampa in a teaser leg up to 7.5 or 8 right now?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I mean,
well, just think about what you're saying.
Yeah.
You would not tease Tom Brady as a home playing at home against a team who has had issues finishing up to over a touchdown. Does that not say everything that needs to be said about the perception of Brady and the Bucs?
Sure. I mean, is there a Brady tax and all that? I mean, look at last week. We just bypass how difficult things have been and think, okay, against a pathetic Panthers team, that's a layup. It was not a layup. That was not even close to being a layup.
And in the end, you're still, though, for Tampa Bay, you're still leading the division, tied with the tiebreaker over Atlanta, still over a $2 favorite to win the division, even though Atlanta has now come down to 3-1. At the end of the day, given how weak the surroundings are in that NFC South, do you still think we get to January and Tampa kind of backdoors their way or figures out some sort of solution to at least get into the postseason?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
because the question is, who's the alternative, right? Like, who else is getting in?
Well,
you think Atlanta has enough to actually sustain it and find their way to?
I mean, I think Atlanta is going to get Cordarrelle Patterson back, and they're going to get healthier in the back end at some point. This one's such a tough call. I mean, look at New Orleans; they've been underachieving, and they got a tough game coming up too, right? So
against the Raiders, Las Vegas is favored on the road there.
Superdome. Yeah. So how difficult is that game going to be? And they're pretty much out of it. Well, yeah, they would go to 6 losses. I think the Saints would pretty much be out of it, but you just don't know. And then,
yeah.
I mean, look, if you're Carolina at 2-5, are you really thinking you can win a division?
No, no.
I know Wilkes is probably saying that, though.
They might not win a game the rest of the year.
Right.
I mean, I know what Josh was saying about, okay, divisional matchup, you're getting the line move. I'm sorry. That was the Super Bowl for Carolina.
But if you're Wilkes and you're trying
to... You have no personnel.
If you're trying to become or maintain your position as a head coach in the National Football League, what are you going to do? It's like Major League. Let's just go out and win everything.
Of course.
I said something different. But...
Well, thank you for being professional.
Yeah, I know. I had to be professional right there. Absolutely.
Let me throw a hypothetical at you. I know we're so early to be talking about potential playoff matchups, but let's just say you get 8-9 Tampa, 8-8-1 Tampa winning the NFC South, hosting the 5-seed New York Football Giants. Could you imagine a matchup like that? At Raymond James, where let's say the Giants at this point might go, 11-6 here and get the top wild card of the three now that we have in the postseason. Like, can you imagine how would the betting market react to that? The charm Giants against the awful Brady Bucks, but in the playoffs, like, what would the number even be? I have no idea.
You know, I know you're kidding, but that might happen.
I mean, that's what the playoff match would be if
that
it started today.
Happen. That might happen. Tampa wins the division with a losing record, and they're hosting a team like the Giants.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Nope.
Would not be the first time that has happened. I don't know. My brain is about to break just thinking about that. You have a birthday this week, right?
Tomorrow.
Whoa!
I know. How about that?
All right. Mike Pritchard. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Birthday week.
Birthday celebration. It's a year-round thing. We'll have to figure out a little beverage to celebrate there, Mike.
A few of them.
There we go. Always great hanging out with you.
You
enjoy
too.
The birthday.
Absolutely.
Mike Pritchard is back tomorrow as we say so long here on the Lombardi Line.